Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's podcast, we have a regular collaborator and a much sought-after guest, Leah, joining the show. Hello, Leah. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me, as always.
Have you been following the World Cup?
Yes, I have been, actually, because I'm doing daily updates in German for my YouTube channel on it.
Absolutely. I actually listened to one or two episodes. Not that I understood much, even though I do speak some Dutch. But first of all, congratulations. You made your official air quotes debut on Guerrilla Cricket today in today's commentary.
Thank you very much.
As I told you off air, right? For me, you've been a part of the family for a long time. And you spoke on the game. You already spoke on at least a couple of games with Wyatt Llanwellys, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did. I actually did. And I guess we'll elaborate on that in due course.
Perfect. I mean, maybe we can also pick it up as we talk about those specific games. So let's go back to the World Cup.
Right? Yes.
So in this case, I think we, in a previous episode, we had covered until the Saturday's games, the doubleheader.
Mm.
So Sunday, we started with a little bit of a damn squib. India, South Africa, it was supposed to be table toppers clash, right?
Yeah.
What happened?
Everyone was very excited about it. And then India batted first and South Africa absolutely collapsed to 83 all out.
To start off, well, I thought, did India leave about 20 runs out there in the field, you think?
Probably. They probably did.
See, Shubman Gill and Rohit Sharma started really well from about 90 odd in just the 11th over.
Mm.
Shubman Gill was dismissed at 93 for 2, right? And then Shreyas Iyer, when he was dismissed, it was 227 again, 37th over. Maybe the run rate fell a little, but that was mainly due to how well Keshav Maharaj bowled, I thought. Really, the difference, 10 overs 30 in a game where your team has considered 326. He was really good. The ball to get Gill, I mean, would have gotten 9 times out of 10, I was telling my roommate, somebody out.
Mm.
And in the next over, he bowled another one of those. Kohli somehow kept it out. And he deserved to get to 100, Kohli. Only thing, if anything, if you want to complain, really, look, it's against a very competitive attack. It's not like you're going to boss them around, but he took some time getting to his 100, didn't he? 20 balls more.
Yeah, and it was... The main thing about this match was that it kind of looked like Kohli trying to get to his 100 That was the 49th, right? Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
That was the game in which he was out with Ken Rahul sometimes, where he was really hugging the strike like he was batting with the tail. That was quite funny, I think. It was really, really interesting because he got there just in the nick of time.
Well, he got there all right, but from when, let's say, Jadeja came in, so he was still building a good innings. When Surya got out, he had no choice but to build again. But I expected he would also step up his batting a little because from the 45th over onwards, you know, once you're very close to 300, Shami, Bumrah will take you across 300. They'll make those 10-10 runs. I would have appreciated if he went a little harder, but it was a tougher pitch than it looked. Right? They batted really well, Iyer and Kohli. And probably Iyer put some of those questions to bed where people thought they could bounce him out and all of those things. He did really well in this innings, also confidence-building innings. Surya did what was required. Rahul failed. I mean, in the bigger picture, it's okay.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry. That was the one where Rahul fell. Yes. But interestingly enough, I think that Rohit Sharma is the only batsman in the top five that has a strike rate above 100. That's really interesting because it kind of means that Rohit steps out of his comfort zone and bashes it around at the top of the order, I think.
I think that is to give Shubman Gill some time to bed in.
Mm.
Rohit has the strokes. He loves the fast bowling. He loves the ball coming onto the bat, right?
He does. But
all of these put together.
Yeah, but normally Rohit is the one that also likes to get his eye in and face around 25 balls in a One Day International and around, I don't know, something like 10 balls in a T20 before he starts to accelerate. And here he made 40 from 24. That's not his usual style of an innings, I would say.
No, I think it was a clear strategy because they wanted to attack Marco Jansen and, in this case, Lungi Ngidi. So whoever would open with him, right?
Mm.
They wanted to unsettle them a bit and it worked perfectly. Both these bowlers were completely ineffective. Rabada is as good as he is, still went for about 4.8 an over. And then, of course, Maharaj is the difference. Everybody else went for runs, you see.
Mm.
Knowing that if you force South Africa to bowl a sixth bowler, they will be forced to bowl somebody like Makram. Right?
Mm.
That means you have some chance of scoring runs. For them, I think, that is South Africa, if somebody attacks Marco Jansen right at the start, because Rabada does not take the new ball anymore, Marco Jansen has been promoted to that role. Right? And there is no Coetzee in this game. So all of
these,
when you look at that their enforcer Coetzee is not there, who usually takes first change. They chose to attack. And this, I think, Rohit Sharma took up upon himself, knowing that he's a senior partner, but also likes the short pitch bowling, which he will get.
Mm.
Right? So, all of it sort of made sense to me. I was very surprised when I saw the score. I had not seen the first 7-8 overs. And I'm like, wow, really? And so on. If I'm not wrong, I was actually recording a podcast with Mark just around that time. By the time I switched on to the game, it was already well and running. Right?
Mm.
But then, okay, all in all, 326 on a Calcutta pitch is not a small total.
No.
And maybe, yeah, 280 is par there, so you're still 30-40 runs comfortably above par. But then the bowling again comes to the party.
Yes, it does. And of course, in the bowling department for India, the one to talk about is Ravi Jadeja, who takes 5 for 33. And I think I remember having read somewhere that Jadeja has now taken 2 fifers in One Day Internationals.
Mm.
And I think he's the only bowler whose first and second fifer in One Day Internationals is more than 10 years apart.
Oh, wow. Okay. Quite a statistic.
Something like that. Yes.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. I did not expect that. But okay. I mean, look, he's often used as a controlling weapon rather than, you know, an attacking weapon. In this case, he came through as the attacking weapon. Somehow Kuldeep slipped back into a controlling role. I mean, not that he had to do a whole lot. By the time Kuldeep came, the match was well done. But for me, it was this different dimension that Jadeja showed in the form of a pure attacking batsman. Sorry, a pure attacking bowler. Well, batsman earlier, but then bowler, right? So that was the real difference. Like, see, the first thing for me, if you look at how South Africa started, Quinton de Kock was dismissed in the second over. Very crucial. But then Siraj and Shami kept the runs down. It was already the ninth over when Temba Bavuma tried to break loose and was dismissed. Score was only 22. In a chase of 300 plus, if you don't get off to a start of at least 5-6 runs an over by the 7th, 8th over, you know you're in trouble. Right? Yes. You're 20-30 runs already behind because the new ball is slipping out of your hand. That new ball opportunity. Then, so this is one thing we saw what happens when Rasif van der Dusen and Aidan Markram fail. They are so important. Again, Rasif van der Dusen, I think they knew what not to do to Rasif van der Dusen, where to not bowl, not to bowl at his strengths. Here comes Jadeja, here comes Shami, where they pick it up equally well. So Rasif van der Dusen was already there from the second, third over. But the pressure that's been built up by Bumrah and Siraj is not allowed to release. Usually it happens where they get away to two boundaries and the batsman suddenly feels settled. So if you are 13 of 32 and you get two fours, you are 21 of 34 and you're like, okay, that's not bad, right? And then you can carry on. That didn't happen. That was not allowed to happen. And there, Mohammad Shami takes the credit because he dismissed both these people. Rasif van der Dusen, LBW, and then Aidan Markram caught behind. I think Aidan Markram could not have played that shot. He sort of was really aggressive. He wanted to break those shackles, right? He knew what was going on. So that he wanted to set up a platform for Klaassen, Miller, and the likes. No, not to be.
No.
And then Jadeja comes in and he takes out both these big hitters, Klaassen and Miller. Again, Klaassen, I think, really struggled. I watched this live. Klaassen didn't have a clue how to play Jadeja.
No, he did not. He absolutely did not. Yeah, I mean, if you look at South Africa's betting card, the high score is 14 by Janssen. This is a collapse of epic proportions, I think.
Only 14 scores, not even a 20, and only single digit. So that's excellent bowling.
Absolutely.
So you have to give credit to Indians. They're clicking well as a unit. They made some mistakes in the field previously. Jadeja dropped it, but they still won that game. So, see, those things are important. You have to go through the cycle of a few hiccups, so to say. This team is speaking nicely. But then these two are the table toppers. So we have to ask each other the question, is India really peaking too early? Because, see, Australia is somehow coming up. They're picking up the pace as the knockouts approach. You'll see New Zealand has faded away a little, but we'll speak about New Zealand shortly. But between South Africa and India, South Africa needed that knock. They will be stronger for it. Or was that demoralizing for you?
This is a really rather interesting question, I think, because I've heard it argued that, okay, you will have some bad days in a World Cup, in a tournament that lasts nearly 2 months. And for South Africa, it is fine to have these bad days in group matches that don't really matter for their prospect of advancing to the semis. Yeah, I'm fine with that. They are through the semis. That is fine. You can get in some bad days here. But when I look at this India team, they have not really shown any weakness. They don't look like they need a day off thus far.
Well, look, if you're an India fan, this is what happened. Indian team started peaking at the right time and they were building up to the World Cup in 2003 finals and they ran across a red hot Australia, right?
I know. I also really like the Indian team, as you know. And I know they threw it away in 2017 at the Champions Trophy in the final against Pakistan, where they collapsed. They threw it away in the 2019 World Cup in the semifinals against New Zealand, where they were 5-3 at one point. And yeah, I know, but this team looks really, really strong.
Well, I think Rahul Dravid is actually comfortable with just having five bowlers. That's what he said, because that balance is gone. Hardik Pandya injured. They have a full fast bowler drafted into the squad. I dare say in the coming game, he might even be given a go. So Krishna, Shardul Thakur, Ashwin, you expect all of these people to play in the coming game against Netherlands?
I mean, India can play whoever they want in the game against the Netherlands, because they will be through to the semis.
In top spot. I think it's secure, right?
I think. Let me have a look. Yes, it is. It is. They are on 16.
It is secured. So 14 is the highest number anybody else can get to. So top spot is yours. So you'll be looking more keenly on if you're an India fan and who'll play India in the semifinals. What sort of changes do you foresee for South Africa? Because they're going to play Afghanistan.
I don't think South Africa should be too concerned with their team. I think they had a day off, of course, but their team seems really well balanced at this point in time. I wouldn't change anything, really.
India exposed one of the weaknesses, the sixth bowler weakness, which South Africa carry as well as India do. So India exposed that very effectively when they attacked their top order bowling, or their top two bowlers when they came very hard at their top two bowlers, right? So similarly, isn't Andile Pailukhwai a part of the squad? Would they give him a go, do you think?
I don't think they will, because actually the teams that they may come up against in the semi-finals also carry that weakness.
Right.
With the sixth bowler. I don't really think that South Africa are actually thinking about their sixth bowler being a weakness, or their part-timers being a weakness.
The only guy who's sort of remained untested or hasn't had much of a go is Andile Pailukhwai. I 100% expect him to play, by the way, when it comes to the game in South Africa, Afghanistan. So, Godse will come back. Rabada will sit out. I expect potentially Lungi Ngidi to sit out. Andile Pailukhwai to come in his place, and Gerald Kutsi to come in place of Rabada. But let's see. I mean, and the batting looks okay. Batting looks perfectly okay. You're right.
No
need to change much there. And then, yeah, Lizard Williams is the only other bowler who's not had a go, but I think he'll wait out. This is the feeling I get. But yeah, nobody will dare take Afghanistan lightly. So, I mean, they've had a reversal. We'll get to it. But nobody will take Afghanistan lightly after the way they've played in this World Cup, right?
No, they are the team of the World Cup for me this year.
Let's quickly go through the other game before we discuss that incredible game and innings. Almost a mundane game if you were to think of Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. You would think that, because the one that followed was even more explosive. But what all went on in that game? Yeah, I've lost track. All I remember are a couple of big events. But before that, it is a very good game, right? It's a solid game of cricket.
Yeah, Sri Lanka batting first, and they were getting on really, really rather well. Actually, until some shenanigans happened. They had a centurion. They had Charit Asalanka making 108. But the big thing we need to talk about, of course, is Angelo Matthews becoming the first batsman in an international game being timed out for naught.
You're right. You know, the game sort of got shadowed by what happened in the middle. So first of all, Sri Lanka were in a slump. I think Sadhir Samarawikrama got trapped by Shakib Al Hasan, who gave him a boundary in a similar way, and then put the fielder there, and he hit straight down fielder's throat. Everybody, I think, in the ground saw what was going to happen, except Sadhira, and he got out, right? Then comes this drama where Angelo Matthews comes out, and he, when he's just about to take strike to a ball, his helmet strap snaps. He asks for a new helmet. And then by the time the new helmet comes and he's again ready to take guard, he's timed out. And pointed out by a fielder, Shakib says in the interview after the game, he took whatever was the relevant action, he appealed. And the appeal was held. But we've come across another very important piece of information.
Yes, exactly.
So Angelo Matthews, with 30 seconds remaining, was told, you have 30 seconds. Yes. Otherwise you'll be timed out. Then the helmet drama happened.
Yeah, and first of all, that is absolutely correct. But that piece that we both read also contains something I think is even more important. And that thing is that if there is a problem with your protective equipment, it is generally understood that the first thing you do is inform the umpires about the problem. So they can then manage the time, which Matthews didn't do. The first thing that he did after his helmet strap broke was signal the Sri Lankan dugout. He did not inform the umpires, who would probably have said, okay, time out with about 5 seconds to go at this point, and allowed him to signal for another another helmet for a replacement, but he did not do that. And another point in that article was that Shakib appealed for a timed out to Murray Erasmus, who then asked Shakib if he wanted to uphold that appeal. And having watched it live, I think I can't really blame for Shakib to uphold this, because this was basically time-wasting shenanigans from Matthews seeing it live, I think.
I dare say when you're walking into the ground as a new batter, you are expected to have your equipment in order. It's very weird that you go and then do something.
Yeah.
It has happened that people have noticed something was missing. For example, I think Mujib once forgot his box. And then I don't know how much time he took and whether he faced a ball in between.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Angelo Matthews, if somebody told me in 30 seconds you're going to be timed out, the first thing I'm going to do, maybe not even look at my helmet and just play a ball. Then my innings is underway, right? Why did you not choose to do that?
Yeah, exactly. And then that, looking at it live at the time, Shakib was the villain. Absolutely. But reading up on it on Crick Info, Matthews is not blameless here, I think. You do not do that.
Exactly. When you've been warned, you're probably opening the door for the other party to be aware there is a case for a dismissal here. And why wouldn't you get rid of one of your main opposition batsmen without having a ball face?
No,
why wouldn't you take that opportunity, right? I don't blame Shakib either. There is the case of, you know, morality, cricket spirit, all that. But look, Donald himself was apparently not really happy. And he himself had a thing or two to say to Shakib after what happened. And apparently now he's going to be asked for an explanation by the board. We'll let Donald deal with it, because Donald is old school. He said, I don't think I like it. Let's not forget, this is the same Donald who, well, for his spirit, you should say, there was a Sultan Zarwani. Do you remember this UAE player?
Yes, of course, of course. I actually do remember it, because that is the reason I own a hand-signed copy of Wizards from Anindo.
Aha, I
because,
see.
Because, fun fact, everyone, the Sultan Zarwani was not dismissed by Alan Donald in that famous floppy hat one-day international during the World Cup. He was actually dismissed by Macmillan because he was hit on the head, on the unprotected head, by an Alan Donald bouncer, then got up again, faced out the over, was out caught Cronje bowled Macmillan the next ball he faced, and then was immediately airlifted out of the ground into a hospital for checkups.
That makes sense. But that's the whole point when you say, you know, he actually upheld that part of it where he actually warned batsman, you may want to wear a helmet, son. I can bowl a bit fast.
Yeah.
Right? And then he followed up with an accurate bouncer. All right. Coming back to this one, look, if I were Shakib, would I do it? It's a very tough question to ask. But what he did was well within the rules of the game.
That's the point. It's in the playing conditions, probably for a reason. And I never understand arguing it's against the spirit of the game if you enforce the rules.
You can always rewrite the rules to make it clear
what
is acceptable and what is not. But then you'd also tell people how to behave. That's why the rules can't have it. But then you see this upper class English gentry attitude that is taken in cricket is not relevant.
No, but the timeout rule is actually only part of the laws since 1980. It feels a bit weird condemning enforcement of these rules in a match. Feels weird.
No, but apparently every time a new batsman starts making his way to the crease, the third umpire is instructed to start counting time.
Yes, he is. Is it only the third umpire? The third umpire is instructed to keep track of the time and inform the on-field umpires, who are instructed not to inform the players.
Of course. I think it happened multiple times that the third umpire has quietly said in an on-field umpire's ear, guys, he's timed out. If an appeal happens, you'll have to uphold it. Something like this. And they all keep quiet. They carry on.
Yes, exactly. And apparently in this case, the point was that Matthews entered the field of play 1.5 minutes after the wicket fell.
That is a good question. It was literally 90 seconds in.
Mm. So when he stepped over the boundary rope, he had already wasted 90 seconds of the 120 he was allowed.
Yeah, that's a bit weird as well. Maybe he was in the middle of a comfort break and he had to run out because it was unexpected.
Mm. Yes, that was kind of weird.
Nah, in international cricket, these things happen. It once happened that, again, South Africa is the example where India were playing South Africa in a test and Ganguly had to sort of start padding up because Lakshman was taking a comfort break and suddenly a batsman was dismissed. There was nobody else padded up. So then Ganguly started padding up and then Smith told him, take your time, come out when you're ready. They waited for 6 minutes, apparently. He could have been timed out two times, I think. In MCC loss, it's 3 minutes. International loss, it's two minutes. So whatever, he could have been timed out three times.
Yeah, and there's also the story about the batsman running from the dressing rooms at Lord's and going down three flights of stairs instead of just two and having to run up from the basement again to reach the long room.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Yes. I think it happened very recently even. But okay, that person was a bit worried that he would be timed out. That's why he had to run. But that's okay. And also good to know. Plenty of interesting things to discuss here because there looks to be enough culpability if you park the question of this cricket spirit on the side. What Shakib did, he said at the end of the game, I would do it again. But then what I liked is they followed up. They followed up with a consummate chase.
Yes, they did. They did. And Shakib was instrumental in that chase. He made 82 in a successful chase in a partnership with Shanto, who made 90.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know Zupun is going to hate me for saying that, but but that Bangladesh chase was actually very, very well played. Very well.
Look, there were some catches dropped. I think Asalanka dropped Shanto very early.
Yeah.
Right? And then
he did.
So sometimes catches win matches. When we come later on, we'll also see it, right?
Oh,
you
yes.
You can't drop these catches and then expect not to get punished because they're out to prove a point. But what I saw for the first time is Bangladesh look cool, not excitable. Just get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Litton Das was injured. He was not in a position to carry on, but he tried to go for it and got out. Fine. So that meant, their openers were dismissed cheaply. 2 for 47, the game hung in balance. But then by the time Shakib got out, the match was done. At least all that remained was getting a few runs, which I think Bangladesh puffed a little too much on. Because they wanted some net run rate as well in case, something goes wrong. But doesn't matter, right? So all this is like a storm in a teacup eventually because Bangladesh were the better team that day.
They were. And I don't think that Matthews would have actually rescued them because Bangladesh chased down the total in within the 42nd over.
Correct.
What significant score might have actually come from Matthews batting? Yes, of course, there might have been a double ton, but I find that highly unlikely.
They made up for it well. I mean, I think between Dhananjay and Mahesh Tikshana, they did enough. But the innings of the day for me was Charit Asalanka's 100.
Absolutely.
Wonderful hitting. Clean sixes.
Yes. He was really good.
But yeah, you know, Bangladesh will also look back at some not so good bowling performances because they let Sri Lanka get away to 279 when it looked like probably 220, 230 was what Sri Lanka would make. But then, yeah, they chased it down. It's okay. Not a lot to write home about if you're a Sri Lankan bowling team. But, well, Tichna, I think, was very disappointed in the end. He did well. Madhushankar remains a bit costly. He gets the wickets, but he remains a bit costly. Something he'll need to work on, I think. Matthews came on late, made some impact, but probably it was a little too late. 80 runs, you think, is... You know, some teams can panic. Bangladesh are known to panic, but not in this case. They had a point to prove they wouldn't. And they didn't. So, then we move on to potentially the game of the tournament so far. Australia playing Afghanistan, Leah.
It might be the game of the the decade, actually. Because not only did this match see the first century in an ODI World Cup for Afghanistan by Ibrahim Zadran, who made the first World Cup century for his country. He is twice in the top five of highest World Cup scores for Afghanistan. And he helped Afghanistan to 291 for five, which was at the time pretty good going, because I watched this match and we were on air at the time with White Line Wireless. Everyone was agreeing that a score of around 250 for Afghanistan would make the chase for Australia really, really tricky and would make for an interesting game. And we were at the start of the Australian chase proven right, because Australia lost four wickets within the first power play. And then came Glenn Maxwell.
Josh Inglis was also dismissed for a duck, first ball duck. Maxwell actually came in facing a hat-trick and he first blocked it off, right? But then that crucial run out of Marnus Labuschagne, when Labuschagne was caught ball watching, it was not Maxwell's fault in any way. And then Stoinis failing. You thought, no, come on. This is stage is set for Afghanistan to win by, I don't know, 120 runs, 140 runs, right? And then suddenly, they'll be fourth on the table. They'll have a decent net run rate advantage potentially, right?
Yes.
It all turned on its head. Did actually Maxwell ask Stark not to review at all?
Apparently he did, because I've heard that Maxwell actually said to him, no, you do not review this. I need that review.
Fair enough. I mean, unless Maxwell or Stark comes and confirms this, we don't know.
But no,
seemed incredibly selfish, but in the end, it paid out. The most critical thing there was if Stark knew he had not nicked it, he would review it. Probably he was not sure. That's the whole point. Because there was a woody sound. It was the ball hitting the stumps. Right? Which you did not expect, unfortunately. And even I heard a woody sound. I thought he had nicked it. It was the ball hitting the stumps. So, but a lot of credit to Afghanistan up until that point. So, Naveen ul Haq and Azmatullah Omarzai. Mujibur Rahman was punished right at the start. But then, I think Mitchell Marsh threw his wicket away. I think it was a needless shot. You saw it coming. The ball, next ball would come in. He just missed it. Josh Inglis threw his wicket away. And then, Marnus Labuschagne, definitely. I think Warner went for an expansive shot because he thought he was scoring very slowly. That was a bad idea because he had just witnessed Marsh's dismissal. So in a way, Australia collapsed terribly. They actually performed as badly as they could have with this game. And then what happened? So what do we say about that drop of Mujibur Rahman at the short final?
Maxwell was he dropped one or two times. The second time,
it's very tough. I don't call it a catch drop.
Because
it was Captain Shahidi running back from extra cover towards long off. Look, if they stick, they stick. Those are not something you can really even train for, I think. That was very bad. Maxwell is the beneficiary of that. It's just his luck that day. And he also reviewed one. He actually used that review that he retained by sacrificing Stark, and he saved himself. He had been given out on a very, very tight one. which looked like it was bouncing over the stumps. To naked eye, there was no chance it was going to be bouncing over the stumps, right?
No.
Yeah, there
but
you go.
It did.
Apparently, it did.
But it did.
So then he unleashes this barrage of big hits. 21 fours and 10 sixes. But he runs a lot. So 21 fours and 10 sixes will give you 140 runs. I mean, it's not insignificant, but it's not everything. That means a cramped Maxwell had to keep running. I mean, for me, what is incredible is Pat Cummins made 12 of 68 from the other end. Strike rate of 17.5.
Yes.
And he probably witnessed the best innings of all time from a non-striker end.
Dear listeners, it is really hard to explain why this is probably the greatest one-day international innings of all time, even though it is not the highest scoring one-day international innings of all time, because Maxwell is in with his back to the wall, Australia's back to the wall, and around two-thirds of the way into this innings, Maxwell is starting to cramp up really, really badly. He cannot take singles. They cannot run. He's looking like a person really, really needing to go to the toilet, taking singles. He cannot move his head because his neck is stiff. He cannot bend over to take strike, and he's still standing fully upright. He still plays reverse pulls or sweeps or whatever you want to call them. It is there's several instances where he tries to run a single, reaches the opposite crease and falls down and looks like he's having strychnine poisoning because he's don't laugh, because this is actually what strychnine poisoning looks like, that he's arching his back very, very unnaturally. He has cramps so bad, and he still puts together the highest ever 8th wicket partnership in one day internationals with Pat Cummins, who contributes, as you said, 12 runs to this. They make 202 of 170 deliveries. And Maxwell's contribution comes mostly in boundaries. He hits fours and sixes, basically, because he can't run.
Right. When he knew the sight of the victory, four boundary shots and five balls to close the game out. I mean, had to be the drama, right? I remember tweeting this out. He required 5 for a double 100. Right? His team needed 5 to win. His partnership with Cummins needed 4 for a 200. What does he do? He hits a 6. I mean, four boundary shots. We were all left stunned. Last an hour of his innings, I must concede, right? I stopped working. I just started looking at the screen. It was so mesmerizing because I think Afghanistan ran out of ideas. So I saw that there were some bowling swaps that did not make sense. They kept their weapons, their more potent weapons, till a little bit later in the game, hoping he'll get tired and he'll give it away. Because they knew even if with 30, 40 runs left, if they could get Maxwell, the game was done. They would dismiss the others, they thought. It was not to be. With 30 or 40 runs left, this guy just finished the game. In a matter of 6-7 balls.
I think Afghanistan threw it away by not bowling wide to Maxwell when he started to cramp up, because they could have stopped Australia from scoring at that point, because Maxwell was not able to reach anything that was close to the tram lines. If they had bowled wider to him, Australia would have lost. But they didn't.
I think it would have made it more interesting for sure. At least Cummins would have had to take more strike and maybe let Maxwell recover on the non-striker's end for an over or two. You know, because Maxwell played a test match innings. This was a test match, pretty much. Right? You have a tail ender on one end and a very big hitter on one end. And the hitter is farming the strike every over. Yeah. What surprised me was how he was allowed to farm the strike.
Yeah. especially for the fact that he really couldn't farm the strike in a conventional manner because he couldn't run.
Well, he would hit it to a part of the ground where he would normally get to, and then hobble.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's my point. He had to hit what would normally be a double just to take a single.
Correct. I mean, he was seeing the ball. I don't know how big or how well. He can't even explain it, I think. Some of those shots he played. At least Afghanistan themselves were mesmerized. Their coach came out at the end of the game and said, "We helped Maxwell along the way." Right? There were these two drop catches. He got lucky with the review, but then he kept hitting. I mean, that sort of brave approach, it overshadowed a completely, consummate batting performance by Afghanistan, who set it up.
Yes.
Up until the 38th, 39th over, started the acceleration with, Asmatullah Omar Sahib walking out. And then finished it off beautifully with Rashid Khan giving that impetus, taking them probably 20 runs beyond where they could have finished. Right? 291 in Wankhede is a reasonable score. For me, 270 is about par. So you're 20 runs above par. But more importantly, you have a bowling attack, which, well, nearly came good, right? Except for one man. So must be asked, right? Was it that knock on his head that made him play such an innings?
I don't know. With any other batter, I would have probably said yes, it was a knock on the head. but with Maxi, you just never know. But another thing that I find really, really interesting is that the general perception is that Australia have a weakness against spin. And in this innings, in the power play, they fell to pace.
Right. Now, it was good bowling.
Four wickets fell to pace. Yes, it was really good bowling by Afghanistan as well. But I said it yesterday. I can't say much more about this match. This was awesome. And as much as I would have liked an Afghanistan victory to make the situation on the table a bit more interesting, it was a privilege to watch Glenn Maxwell bat, to watch Glenn Maxwell make the only one-day international double century from a position lower than three.
Right. The only one in a chase. A double hundred in a chase.
Yes. Yes.
So all of these are fantastic. I mean, and if his career had ended Maxwell without a double hundred, you would then look back and say, what is the point, right? This guy needed to have, right? So, and then it's a good thing that he's actually able to finally score a double hundred from an impossible situation, win the game for his team. And we're all happily clapping on the sidelines, except maybe even some Afghanis would have clapped, I think. It was such a game.
Yeah, but it was, but I think a few more nights of sleep over it, and they will realize they witnessed history.
Probably it's been made aware to them, but it's a tough pill to swallow, nonetheless. What actually?
Yes, happened. I know, but it was a really, really amazing performance by Glenn Maxwell.
Fair enough. Now, onward to the last game, today's game, England and Netherlands. Well, Netherlands have a little bit flattered to deceive here simply because of the way they have lost. Loss in itself is not a problem. Their losses in the last two games left a lot to be desired. And this one was no better. At least they were not this whole slew of runouts. But England finally woke up. Malan made his usual stodgy runs. Joe Root at least made that 28 that bridged some 5-8 overs that was required so that Ben Stokes didn't come in too early. Right. And then Ben Stokes had an unusual ally, must be said, in Chris Wokes.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
I think Moeen Ali and potentially even Liam Livingstone have batted themselves out of this team, I'm wondering. Right. Harry Brook is a future. He may get dropped temporarily, but he'll come back. I expected to see Ben Duckett in this game, by the way. I didn't see him. I was a bit surprised.
No.
Gus Atkinson makes sense. David Willey will play all the remaining games. I think England want him. This management want him in this team as long as possible. That way, if you look at it, Adil Rashid, I thought, could also be given a break. But Moeen Ali has not stood up with his spin bowling, right? And there's nobody else. So Rashid had to play. But then, I think batting first England...
Wait, Wait, what do you mean Moeen has not stood up with his spin ball? He got his first wicket of the World Cup in this match.
Exactly. That's what I meant. First wicket.
Okay.
As in, yes. If he had 10 by now in 8 games, you would have probably rested Adil Rashid, right? Have Joe Root bowl. Yeah. Put Liam Livingstone in instead of Rashid. Because then Liam Livingstone will still bowl. You have 3 spinners. You have 3 options.
Mm.
Right? But that was not to be. So Adil Rashid played. Look, it was a bit disappointing the way Dutch ended with the ball. Logan van Beek and Bastelida, who closed out the innings, I thought were a bit disappointing. Mm. But they were under assault from one of the premier stroke makers of our generation, I must say. Ben Stokes in full flight is quite something else with the bat. And he showed that once again today. And then, of course, Chris Wokes, who actually did not play a bad hand in the last game as well, did well here, got a 50. So you always feel happy when people like Chris Wokes make some runs or take some wickets. He's one of those goody-goody boys. You want them to succeed, right? But again, Aryan Dutt was a bit costly towards the end, but 2 for 67, Paul van Meekeren 1 for 57. I think they were all a bit costly going into the last 10 overs, where they considered 120 plus runs to England. When England looked shaky to even make 250, because look, when Moeen Ali was 192, you're still in a lot of trouble. From there, you had no business conceding 125 runs to a partnership between Wokes and Stokes, right?
No.
So that's unfortunate. But yeah, I think it's again a bit of experience because they are committed in the field. Their bowlers are good. They train hard. But sometimes, you know, it's that cunning. You need to be thinking on your feet at that point in time where all your plans are simply not working, but you still have to find a way through, right? Because even I think that fifth bowler's quota was well handled. Rolla Fandamaro was attacked, but then Colin Ackerman stepped in. Fifth bowler, 10 overs, 53. That's okay, right? You'll take that. Your main four bowlers failed miserably. That's bad. But then when they started, I still thought Singh should have played. If ever there was a chance,
he probably should have.
I would have batted. I would have given Max O'Dowd one go in the middle order. I don't know. Maybe it's too much or too inventive at this point in time, and maybe he'll not buy it. Teja scored some runs, but Teja would have sat out in my book, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
He's not had a very good tournament, so he would have sat out. But he was the unbeaten batsman in the end, the highest scorer. But then, look, you have to do better than 179. You have to make 220, 230, bat into the 40th, 43rd, 45th over, and then be all out. You can't be all out before 40 overs.
Yeah. Right?
That is what I'm trying to say. This is his highest score, I think, Teja, in the last 5 to 8 games. So he'll be happy. A lot of learning here if you're a Dutch team. Only towards the end, they flattered to deceive, unfortunately. And that, for me, was the pain. That's all.
Yeah, true. But we have to keep the big picture in mind here. The Netherlands have shown that they can show up by beating South Africa in this tournament, Bangladesh and South Africa. And I talked to Kate, who lives in the Netherlands as well, and she said that 2 victories in this World Cup would probably be a good record.
Yes,
for the Netherlands, and I agree with her. And the Netherlands have those 2 victories. I don't expect them to win against India. Otherwise, if India decide to play the D team, it would be well. That would be something to talk about, but I don't expect India to lose to the Netherlands in this World Cup.
I don't expect India will drop again, at least not the Netherlands. I mean, as much as I love the Netherlands and as much as I love supporting them, I have to state this factually. Yeah. I don't see an upset possible.
Yes, exactly.
But
they've been good.
They have been good. Look, I made the same prediction before the tournament started. 2 wins would make it a good tournament for Netherlands. This was done.
Yes.
But it's also about how you lose, isn't it? You lose, I lose, we lose is no big deal.
Mm.
You don't lose by 160 runs. You don't lose by 150 runs. You don't lose by a double-digit all-out like in the last game, right?
Mm. Yeah, okay.
That's what I meant. Their top order again. I want to see their top order once go to 200 for 2 or 200 for 3.
Yeah. All right. I see what you mean.
Right. Well, Shakib Al Hasan has been ruled out with a finger injury.
Mm. Yeah, I thought that was a bit suspect, actually.
Mm. Uh-huh. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, he was ruled out of the World Cup with a finger injury he apparently incurred while batting against Sri Lanka, which was managed by tape and painkillers during the innings. He was apparently injured early in his innings. It seems a bit like he has become a bit of a PR disaster for the board. So, I mean, they're out of it. They're out of the World Cup. There is nothing to win for them from here. So,
why not let him play the last game if that is the case? I think we both can accept Shakib will not play another World Cup. At least ODI World Cup, isn't it?
No, he probably won't because of his age. Yeah. That's true. But to me, it smells like a PR disaster for the board, and they recalled him. Because there was something about him traveling home to Bangladesh during this World Cup to speak with his mentor, and I think they've had enough of him.
Well, I mean, if that were to be the case, in either way, I will miss seeing Shakib. He's an entertainer. He's also their mainstay when it comes to bat or ball. So Bangladesh, the team, will miss him. Yeah, but sometimes you have to take some of this, some of these shenanigans along with what he can deliver. But then we've always seen it with Shakib. Mm. A little bit of hot blood just under the surface, right? But that's okay. I really hope, you know, we get to see Shakib again as soon as possible, active and playing for Bangladesh on the field.
Absolutely. And I think we will keep seeing him play in franchise leagues for a few more years.
It's good to hear from Shakib, the individual. But for me, Shakib is a person who can win a test match.
Yes, you can.
That's not very often that you see it.
Yes, true. All right. That's true.
Those are all the news from the World Cup. But if we go off the field, so there has been a report published about the Sri Lankan Cricket Board, about their mismanagement and mishandling and so on. And apparently, they've made a very powerful enemy in the sports minister of Sri Lanka. How do you see this show-off really finishing? Because the minister wanted to put an interim board in place, but the highest court in that land has stuck that decision down. They say he can't do that. Then he's fought back, wherein his own colleagues have tried to restrain him, but he says, I don't have to consult anybody. I'm the sports minister. I don't even have to consult the president. But then in order to sort of appease him, they've set up a fact-finding committee to try and figure out what's going on. Why did Sri Lanka play so badly? But I think he's been ranting against the board for a while already. He openly sought the help of the inspector general, the attorney general, and the president of Sri Lanka to oust this board because he felt they were a bunch of whatever. So, how do you see this going?
I'm not going to give a prediction how this will end. But all I want to say about this kind of stuff is that it's always very frustrating for me as a fan to see something like that, because systemic corruption period is what's holding cricket back in so many regions of the world, and I just don't want to see it. And another thing is this intervention by politicians in this direct intervention by politicians into questions of personnel. I find that very frustrating. It is okay to investigate sporting bodies for corruption and stuff like that, but politicians should stay out of it, I think.
Well, look, when it comes to Sri Lanka, yeah, they've been doing from time to time where the minister steps in, dismisses the board, and then ICC fails to recognize the body that is now the board, and then finally they come to some sort of an agreement and some elections happen. I think 2015 such a thing had happened, so it's not unknown.
No, it really is not. Hope
these sort of matters sort of stop. But nonetheless, we'll see that, you know, common sense prevails. Let's just call it like this.
Yeah, okay. I'm fine with that.
All right. So then good news, if you were to see from, you know, path-breaking perspective, New Zealand cricket will now have a first woman chair, Diana Puketapu. Mm-hmm. I really hope I've pronounced that name right. Will be replacing
you.
Martin Sneddon as the chairperson of New Zealand cricket shortly. Mm. And Sneddon, the former chief executive, he's also served three times as director. And now he's with a year to go. He said he will now allow for a smoother transition.
Mm.
And then he'll also cede his seat in the ICC board to Roger Tous, former international cricketer. So, by the way, this lady has a long-term leadership experience in sporting bodies. Also, she's been NZC director for already almost 6 years now. So there's something, some pedigree there, and she's a very experienced hand at this. So we wish her all the best in the coming days, and hope she can take New Zealand cricket and world cricket to greater heights.
Absolutely. And I think what I find interesting about this story is actually that there seems to be not that much ego in the outgoing administration of the sport in New Zealand here.
Well, what life float conspiracy theory, just for the heck of it.
Hmm?
What if he's been implicated in some sort of a scandal and he's been asked to step down politely before they air out all these dirty laundry? They're like, why don't you simply step down so that we can control the fallout, you know?
Yeah, okay. I get that. But cricket is the kind of sport where the evidence starts to surface before the executive denies it ever happened and then says, I will graciously step down to ensure a smooth transition.
Well, I think the first part of the sentence he swallowed, only we heard the second one out loud, I think. Wait, I'm just joking. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, it's, I wish you all the best. And no, in all seriousness, Cricket New Zealand has been one of the more low-key boards in world cricket thus far. It seems relatively fine. So all the best to her. And all the best to New Zealand cricket.
Well, I'm really hoping, you know, one day we'll see a woman chair of ICC. Indira Nui has been on the ICC board as a, you know, non-executive director for a while. Can't ever see her take over the role of a full director, but or the head of the ICC. I really hope, you know, this lady can make it up to the top. And we need to see some differences. Why not? So it's currently a New Zealander who's the chairman of the board of ICC. So we'll see. Maybe things will change. All right. We wish her all the best. And thank you, Leah, once again for making some time and, in fact, preponing our appointment so that we can discuss Maxi's heroics a bit earlier.
No. Thank you. Thank you to you for having me on again. I'm really honored. And thank you to all the listeners for asking for me to come back. Thank you very much for that.
Fair enough. As always, I would like to have your company again shortly.
Yes, absolutely.
We wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. We hope to have your company in the upcoming episodes as well. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.